This half-qualified labor force grew at a rate of 3.4% per year for most of the 1990s, faster than in any other region of the world. Lackluster economic growth has simply not created a corresponding demand for labor. The mismatch between supply and demand means that unemployment will rise, wages will fall, or both. The misery of economic deprivation and growing unemployment is compounded by living conditions in regional cities, Cairo being an outstanding example. These megalopoli have swelled with 100 million new residents since the mid-1970s. Half of all people in the Middle East, about 135 million, live in them. This number will exceed 350 million within 25 years. The Middle East is not alone in this. Pakistan is experiencing the same urban population explosion and is, if anything, less able to cope. In 1947, Karachi was a city of 1 million. In 2000, it had 11 million. By 2025, its population will approach 20 million. In countries where economic growth is negligible or negative, subsidies are high, and tax collection is uneven, funds are simply unavailable for investment in infrastructure and delivery of public services. As a result, large parts of the urban population lack sewage facilities, clean water, electricity, health care, adequate housing, garbage collection, and efficient transport. The problem of water, already serious, will become much worse in the coming years. In the driest region in the world, the amount of renewable water per person per year in the region dropped from 3,500 cubic meters in 1960 to 1,250 today. By 2025, the average inhabitant of the Middle East and North Africa will have about one-seventh as much water as someone living outside the region. Water quality is also poor. Amman, for example, has periods when sludge rather than water is on tap in many households. If you are poor in this part of the world, therefore, you are also likely to be ill-fed, in poor health, jammed into squalid quarters. It is no wonder that Hamas in Gaza and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which fund clinics, charities, and schools in desperate communities, win converts. Nor is it surprising that people are drawn to the mosque, the one place in the slums which is cool while the outside is hot, the one place which is clean while the outside is filthy, the one place which is calm while the outside is only chaos, as Alan Richards, the Dean of Middle East Economics, has observed. In the poorer countries, this situation will be difficult, perhaps impossible, to reverse, because the infrastructure is so bad, the population so ill-educated, and the natural resources so degraded. Governments remain wedded to centralized economic planning, incompetent judiciaries, rococo regulation, and Byzantine bureaucracies. These inhibit foreign direct investment as well as development of new business ventures at home. Even the region's wealthier states face nearly insurmountable problems. Oil-producing countries have failed to develop other economic sectors that might generate new jobs. Years of high wages and incomes have made these countries uncompetitive in manufacturing, while their citizens' skill levels are not up to the requirements of high-technology industries. As a result, governments will use their oil export revenues to fund non-productive public sector jobs to absorb the growing number of graduates entering the job market every year. Their resources to do so, however, are shrinking and are unlikely to increase as the costs of alternative energy production keep oil prices down. In country after country, the scourges of population growth, economic dysfunction, urbanization, and resource scarcity nourish radical Islam.